Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to take the opportunity to replay several segments of interest that we captured during the last few months of 2019 that still have a lot of relevance as we move through February. First, we're going to dial up an interview we did last fall with Assisted Living Services about initiatives and devices that can help folks age in place and their involvement with the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home and the role they'll play in the annual Conference and Exhibition Expo, which happened in late October. Then we'll replay an episode celebrating Griffin Hospital's recent announcement that it'll be one of the first hospitals in the state to launch Unite Connecticut. This initiative connects health and social service providers through a shared technology platform to address social needs and deliver integrated care. And we'll close replaying a chat about all the Central Connecticut Coast YMCA Network has to offer, from before and after school childcare to water safety to helping you keep your resolution to get healthier, even though we're already into February 2020. We'll be back with these segments and more on today's encore presentation of the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. A number of our Connoisseur Media stations are proud to be longtime sponsors of the annual Bowl to Benefit the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services, coming up Saturday, March 7th at AMF Circle Lanes in East Haven. Umbrella is a program of BH Care that provides services for victims and children of domestic violence free of charge. Serving 19 towns in Connecticut, providing a 24/7 crisis hotline, walk-in centers, safe shelters, court support, community education, counseling, and so much more. Each year, over 7,700 victims and their children walk through the door of the Umbrella Center looking for shelter, help, and hope. So lace up your bowling shoes, organize a team of friends and family or coworkers, and learn more about the 32nd Bowl to Benefit and the important work of the Umbrella Center by clicking on the events tab at bhcare.org. The need for elder care in our state is going to continue to climb in the coming years, and home as well as community-based services saved the state of Connecticut almost $361 million last year and over $1.7 billion over the last 12 state fiscal cycles by keeping people in their own homes. Today, I'm going to be visiting with Lynn Schmidt, who's Director of Marketing for Assisted Living Services. But right now, I'm joined by Tracy Wodach. She's president and CEO of the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home, to talk about the future of elder care in our state and an upcoming conference. So, Tracy, tell us about your association.
Yeah, thank you, John. The Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home is the largest member organization for home health and hospice care. We champion home-based solutions in Connecticut and foster cost-effective, person-centered health care in the setting that people prefer most, which is their own homes. Our members are primarily the state-licensed and Medicare-certified home health and hospice agencies. These are the agencies that serve the patients throughout Connecticut with their post-acute medical, mental health, and serious illness care needs. They're the ones that bring the nurses, the therapists, and the social workers out to the home to help people get better in their homes versus in an institutional setting. We also have a number of non-medical home care agencies, such as assisted living services. Non-medical home care would be the type of services that you would offer in the home to assist with daily living activities, such as bathing, personal care needs, meal preparation, homemaking, et cetera.
So does your association actually do political advocacy on behalf of your members?
So we actually serve the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home does a number of things in collaboration with our members as well as other state agencies and other associations. But one of our primary focuses is for public policy and healthcare system change. We do advocate both at the federal level and at the state level while ensuring quality, cost-effective home health, hospice, and community-based solutions.
What was your biggest victory, would you say, from on the political and legislative front, either federally or here in Connecticut in the past year?
Well, we didn't have a lot of victories this last year. It was more awareness. We had a brand new, or I shouldn't say a brand new, but several brand new legislators who needed quite a bit of education, and understanding the landscape of home and community-based services is a difficult path to help legislators understand. So I would say our biggest victory was helping educate them so we can pave the future of being able to continue to serve our members and our providers in the community.
And I guess a lot more of that education and networking is going to be going on October 25th. You've got a big event coming up. Tell us about that, and who is your key audience?
So the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home holds an annual conference and expo, exhibition expo. And this year, our annual conference will take place at the Hartford Marriott downtown on Friday, October 25th, throughout the day from 8 a.m. until 4:30. Our theme is the future of healthcare at home, looking at new landscapes, new payment structures, and new opportunities. We'll have about 250 of our state's top home health, hospice, and home care industry leaders. They will attend to hear from several national experts addressing the latest trends in home and community-based services, with a particular focus on the changing landscape, moving more and more people back into the community, as well as trying to maintain our community dwellers for long-term viability. And then we'll also be looking at payment model changes and technology.
Excellent. And for folks who may not be the audience for this event, your association still offers myriad resources for non-professionals, for families that may be in that position where they have to either immediately or are in the early stages of considering how to handle the question of whether to age in place or perhaps look at institutional opportunities.
Yes, we have a very robust website, www.cthealthcareathome.org, www.cthealthcareathome.org, and our website is open for both our providers as well as consumers. We look at ways, we offer resources on ways to address how to care for a loved one at home, information about home health and hospice services, the differences between hospice and palliative care, a database search that will allow you to find specific services in the various towns throughout Connecticut. And last year we published a magazine which is available for the public. You may find it out in senior centers, libraries, doctor's offices, that helps people understand the best way to navigate through how to care for a loved one at home. We have regular business hours at our office at 110 Barnes Road and can certainly help people if they come in. We also will guide them through any type of service questions by having them call our office, regular business hours, 203-265-9931.
Excellent. Tracy Wodash is president and CEO of the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home. If this is an area that you are interested in, their upcoming event, The Future of Healthcare at Home, New Landscapes, New Payment Structures, New Opportunities, that annual conference and exhibition expo coming to the Hartford Marriott downtown Friday, October 25th from 8 to 4:30. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us this morning, Tracy, and we'll go meet one of your exhibitors and presenters, Lynn Schmidt. So thanks. So as we indicated, Lynn Schmidt is now joining us on the phone. She's Director of Marketing for the award-winning Assisted Living Services. Lynn, Tracy was mentioning after we wrapped up with her that you guys were a big award winner at this event last year, the annual conference.
Yes, we were. Yes, that's true.
That's great. Well, tell us about assisted living technologies and assisted living services.
Well, Assisted Living Services is our home care agency. It is one of the oldest and largest in-home care agencies in the state of Connecticut. We provide the care and services to seniors and individuals with varying disabilities that allow them to remain safe in their own home. We offer a variety of services, everything from homemaking services to personal care aides and 24-hour live-in care as well.
Okay.
Our sister company, Assisted Living Technologies, provides the technology-based support systems and devices that address key issues that often impact the aging population.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things such as falls, medication compliance, wandering, social isolation. Our goal between the two companies is to combine the two services to allow seniors to age in place, because studies show that most people desire to stay in their own home or their place of residence, and that's what the two companies help to ensure.
So why is this annual event that's coming up next Friday so critical for an organization like yours?
Well, the event is, you know, consists of other professionals that we work with in a professional basis. We refer out oftentimes our clients to other types of care, other types of services. So, in other words, let's say we're working with a family and there's a hospitalization, maybe an example, pneumonia, and once that person recovers in the hospital, they're now going on to a second level of care to rehabilitate, typically like a skilled rehab facility, and we work with those organizations as well. When that person finishes their rehabilitation process, they often are coming back home to us, and we're providing that care that's going to keep them in the home. So the people at this event come from varying disciplines throughout the elder care community.
Mm-hmm.
They might be hospice organizations, they might be hospitals, they might be visiting nurse associations, which we also work with,
mm-hmm.
because they provide that medical component that we don't. I mean, we're a non-medical home care agency, although our aides are trained as certified nurses aides, home health aides, or state PCA trained, and we do have nurses on staff in a management capacity. Traditional home care is considered non-medical, and the VNA piece picks up that skilled piece. So they might have a physical therapist that comes in the home, or an occupational therapist that comes into the home,
mm-hmm.
or a skilled nurse who's doing, let's say, wound care or things of that nature. So we work with those organizations very closely because it's the full gamut of care.
And you're not only going to be exhibiting at that event with stuff, including your CarePlus program and the technologies, electronic medication dispensers, mobile personal emergency
all of those.
Response.
So
and,
there's two booths. We have two
right.
booths exhibiting there. One is for technologies and one is for services. So the technologies booth is what you're referring to when you're talking about the technology-based support systems.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they're all going to be available for people to look at, and you know, there's a variety of different components.
Yeah.
There's, like you were saying, medication dispensers that have alerts, locked medication dispensers. There's personal emergency responses with fall detection, a whole variety of things, and those items are going to be on display at this event.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, your CEO is presenting, right?
Mario D'Aquila, who is our Chief Operating Officer,
mm-hmm.
and he is also the president of our technologies division,
yep.
is going to be presenting. Yes, he will be at this event.
Yeah, he's been a guest on the program before. What's he going to be talking about?
I think he's going to be mostly talking about the technologies and the changes in that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
There have been so many things over the last couple of years, and they're all cutting edge, and we try to stay ahead of the curve. So he's going to be talking about the wireless technology devices that can be utilized to supplement or augment caregiving. He is going to be giving examples of some of the newer items and talking more in depth on those, and you know, telling people, of course, to stop over at our booth so they can see how these how these devices can work to ensure their safety of their patients.
Mm-hmm. In the last minute or so that we have with you, what are a few of the things that people who aren't going to the this event this year, what are a few of the things that they can learn by visiting your showroom in Meriden?
So our showroom's actually moving to Cheshire because we just we purchased actually back in May, and it's been under renovation, two large professional buildings right on Highland Avenue in Cheshire. Our new address is going to be 290 Highland Avenue. We also have 288 Highland Avenue for one of our other programs. But that showroom will be now in Cheshire. And pretty much everything that I was talking about earlier will be there, everything from wandering devices to personal emergency response to medication dispensers to components that help with isolation, where people can Skype in and talk with and see family members. There's a huge variety, almost more than I can mention, and they can come to that showroom and see firsthand what might be helpful for their loved ones.
Great. And also, I arrange in-home consultation. You guys will do the full review.
We do in-home consultations as well, especially on the services side. Mm-hmm. Whenever we're coming, we're taking on a new client, we like to meet with the family, meet with the client, so that we make sure we're understanding their needs and we address them correctly. And it helps us also when we're assigning an aid to make sure that that aid is the right match for that person.
Great. Well, let's wrap it up with the website and let you go.
Sure. So our website is www.assistedlivingct.com.
Mm-hmm.
And our number, if people want to reach us, is 203-634-8668.
Lynn Schmidt.
Our main number.
Lynn Schmidt, Director of Marketing for Assisted Living Services, one of the many organizations who are members of the Connecticut Association for Healthcare at Home, and one of the exhibitors and presenters at the Connecticut Association's annual conference and exhibit expo Friday, October 25th from 8 to 4:30 at the Hartford Marriott downtown. Thank you for being part of the show this morning, Lynn. So as you heard in our introduction, there's some really, really incredible news coming out of the Naugatuck Valley earlier this week. Griffin Hospital was chosen as one of the first hospitals in Connecticut to launch Unite Connecticut, a statewide initiative of the Connecticut Hospital Association that connects health and social service providers through a shared technology platform to address social needs and deliver integrated care. We're going to be talking about that program with a couple of guests with a little bit of a break in the middle. We are on the phone right now with Monica Orris. She's the Director of Population Health at Griffin Hospital. Monica has oversight of the hospital's accountable care, community outreach, employee wellness, screening, and community-based organization alignment programs. So we're going to talk to you a bit, Monica, about some of the work that you do and how it's going to connect to the Unite Connecticut initiative that's being piloted at Griffin. So first and foremost, I guess the question is, how does Griffin Health identify the social needs of so many of its patients?
Sure. So we are part of, back in 2017, we have joined what's called an Accountable Health Communities model. And it's a grant that has been provided, really an offer through Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So that really sort of started our assessments into social determinants of health. So currently we are assessing any member who comes through our ED or primary care offices who have either Medicare or Medicaid as a payer, and we offer them a question. It's about 25 questions total, and it basically asks for whether they have needs in either their housing, food insecurity, if they have inability to pay their mortgage, have issues with their housing such as pests, really, if they're unable to pay their bills, if they have utility issues, or if they really have transportation issues. There's some issue getting to the physician offices for their medical appointments, and also personal safety. So those are really the five domains of social needs that are currently being addressed here at Griffin. Mm. And we also do some outreach to our patients after they leave the hospital, either after an inpatient stay or an emergency room visit. And many of those patients are also being assessed for social needs, for those five domains of social needs. Mm-hmm. And based on their response, we are typically trying to connect them to resources to help address them.
And so I guess this is where Unite Connecticut can provide a platform to do that better?
That's correct. So currently, the way that social determinants are mainly addressed, whether it be transportation or food insecurity or housing, is you refer them to a community-based organization that may be able to help connect that person, that client, to those services. And that referral typically has been done either through phone or through fax, and it's sort of limited. There's only so much information you could share, really due to consent purposes. Mm-hmm. But also there's some limitations in whether or not we know that the person actually followed up with that referral. And that's really been the biggest challenge, is knowing whether or not the member that we referred actually followed through. So what Unite Connecticut is allowing us to do is close the loop on those referrals. So when we make a referral to someone that has a social need that has been identified, we are given the opportunity to provide a consent to share information with the agency that we are referring them to. So by doing that, that allows some communication to happen that typically hasn't happened in the past. So say we refer someone for some transportation needs that could help them get to some medical appointments after their stay at the hospital or emergency department or primary care office. We now can somehow connect with that agency that we refer them to see if, in fact, they were able to reach out, connect, and get the services they need. So Unite Connecticut is allowing us to close the loop on some of these social referrals, as well as find information about what agencies are able to manage and handle our referrals in the most efficient way.
So it sounds like being an affiliate and a pilot for Unite Connecticut, you not only at Griffin Hospital have the opportunity to help each individual who may be able to benefit from being a part of this network, but also there's a much greater kind of overarching public health or community benefit, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I think it's allowing us to look at our partners in the community. You know, it takes many different services to manage someone's health and well-being. So I think the great thing that Unite Connecticut is allowing us to do is to look at our community partners, see where the majority of our referrals going. How are those referrals going? If they're being managed in a great way, and we see that those patients that are accessing services at those agencies, if their health and well-being and their needs are being met, then I think that showcases that that's a really strong partner in our community, and it's someone that maybe we should look for either further, you know, policy change, further investments in those agencies that could really help support community members, whether it be in our community or how they could expand into other communities.
So what other community-based organizations have joined Unite Connecticut, at least to the extent that you know, in the Greater Naugatuck Valley and the Griffin Hospital Care Region?
Yeah, so we have about, so far, 15 agencies have joined. More are joining every day. In fact, I just suggested, sent an email to the Unite Connecticut team for a couple other options so that they could reach out and see if those other community members would join. But we currently have about 15 different agencies that are part of Unite Us or Unite Connecticut. And with those different 15 agencies, they sort of manage about 30 different programs collectively. So, for instance, Team is one of our really great partners in Derby, and they are it's a private, not-for-profit human service agency. They really do a lot of great work with our communities by educating, supporting, and empowering individuals and families. So they're one of our really strongest community-based organizations. And they do things such as elderly services. They have Meals on Wheels. They help with employment and training supports.
Yeah,
they
financial literacy, I guess, also.
Absolutely. Yeah. Financial literacy. They actually have case managers that can help someone with their finances, with budgeting. Mm-hmm. So they're one of our strongest organizations, but we are also working with a couple of the food pantries, as well as some of our behavioral health partners. So the numbers are really expanding, and think that there's really such great opportunity in partnering with them.
Yeah. Has Griffin already kind of hit the ground running and you're already using Unite Connecticut?
Yes, absolutely. We've only started really using them since November 20th, so it's really only been a few weeks. We've probably already made at least 20, if not 30, referrals to these agencies.
And what kind of referrals?
Some of them are based on our food. I think food is probably our largest issue that we're sort of managing. Mm-hmm. And many of those members, so we're making food referrals, we're making referrals to team to help with utilities. Now that the weather's getting cold, some people are expressing that they can't afford to pay for their heating bill. So when the weather gets cold, that's typically a larger need that we're identifying. So there's team, there's some other state action agencies that are helping to provide some resources and budgeting so that those members that identify that need could actually have some resources to help stretch their dollar, if you will, to pay for their heat and utilities. So Meals on Wheels, elder care services, we're finding that many folks need a little extra help in the home, so referring to them for that. Some of our members are saying that they need some help with childcare. We have a diaper bank food. Team has a really great diaper bank that we refer to often. So those types of services are probably the largest.
So in attracting or coming together and becoming a pilot for Unite Connecticut, was there an ultimate outcome that you saw at the end of the tunnel or the end of this establishment and the process of getting it up and working on a day-to-day basis that really resonated with you in your capacity at the hospital as Director of Population Health?
I do think so. I think that one of the greatest things is that one of the most unique things about the Valley Towns is really how they come together and work together so collaboratively. So we had this opportunity to be one of the early adopters of this program, and we used our community organizations. We have some, we have a couple councils in the Valley that really are multidisciplinary from many different aspects, whether it be school systems, Board of Ed, different businesses in the area. We pulled them together during one of the committee and said, listen, this is one of the Unite Connecticut initiatives. And we explained a little bit about it. We had the team come and explain what their services would look like. And we said, who wants to participate? Who wants to jump into this Unite Connecticut initiative and be a partner with Griffin? And I have to tell you, we had at least two large meetings over the course of a couple of months. And we filled the room. I mean, at one point, I think there was probably 30 to 40 different community-based organizations in the room. Hearing what Unite Connecticut was all about, how they could join, the different ways that we could partner on some of our more complex patients and clients in the community. So I think the largest thing that resonated with me was the amazing partnership that we have with our community-based organizations and how willing they were to come and listen and help us sort of figure it out.
Great. Well, we're going to hear more with Todd Liu, who's VP of Population Health and General Counsel at Griffin Hospital, after we take a quick break. But for now, we'll thank you, Monica, for being with us. Monica is Director of Population Health at Griffin Hospital. As you heard, a pilot for Unite Connecticut, the program through which Griffin is able to screen and refer patients to community-based organizations for needs such as housing, food, transportation, and employment, effectively addressing social needs on an individual level. Monica, we look forward to talking with you again about this important program as it develops in the Naugatuck Valley and beyond here in Connecticut. And thank you for your time this morning. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with Todd Liu. Thank you, Monica. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about a number of them through LoveCT. And if you run, work for, or volunteer for a qualified nonprofit, apply now for a chance to receive a $5,000 radio contract to promote your events or brand. Just go to our radio station website, hit the Events Guide tab, and click on the LoveCT to apply for the grant and to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Boquette, your Public Affairs Director. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Come share some laughs and help the volunteers at Watertown's chapter of Royal Family Kids share their hearts with children of abuse, neglect, and abandonment at the organization's fourth charity comedy fundraiser, coming up Friday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at the Father's House, 523 Main Street in Watertown. As always, the show is family-friendly and all are welcome. The 2020 program brings back Connecticut's own Kareem Blue and a few of his hilarious and very talented friends. There'll be plenty of beverages and snacks available for purchase, as well as many raffle prizes, along with the ever-popular 50-50 raffle, but seating is limited and fills up quickly. Tickets are $20 in advance and $25 at the door. And most importantly, all proceeds benefit Royal Family Kids Camps and Mentoring Clubs of Watertown. For advanced tickets or more information about how you can make a difference with Royal Family Kids, contact Michael Hickey at 475-228-0966 or email rfk@realchurchct.com. Well, as promised, we are back with our friends from Griffin Hospital in Derby. Todd Liu is with us. He's Vice President of Population Health and General Counsel at Griffin. Todd oversees Griffin's initiative to deliver high-quality care and strong patient satisfaction by focusing on improving the health of defined populations and reducing the total cost of care. And Todd, I guess being part of this initial Unite Connecticut initiative is really going to play an important role in helping you do your job better. But I was wondering, we spoke earlier to Monica Orris about some of the background information that people need to know about Unite Connecticut as it begins to proliferate across the state. But how did Unite Connecticut come to the state?
So John, Unitas came to the state of Connecticut through the leadership of the Connecticut Hospital Association. So Connecticut hospitals, including Griffin, recognize the fact that we have to start redefining the role that hospitals play in the community. Hospitals have always been, you know, very sophisticated sick care facilities that can take care of people when they have emergency or other kinds of urgent needs. But as we kind of move forward and the healthcare system transforms itself, we have to move away from being a provider of sick care services, and we have to start providing care for the community proactively to keep people healthy, to make sure that we're doing what we can to improve the overall health of the population. And we know that better care and more proactive preventive care also means lower cost healthcare. Because when people don't get preventive health care, what happens is they get gradually sicker over time. And by the time that they need medical attention, it tends to be the more catastrophic stuff, that will land them in the hospital, whether in the emergency department or even as admitted patients on the medical surgical floors. So that's what we're focused on. And again, the Connecticut Hospital Association also recognizes the fact that they have to provide some assistance and support to hospitals to help make that transition from sick care over to value-based care. So they were the ones that actually brought the members together, helped take the members through a process where we looked at different systems like Unitas that are out there that help connect hospitals to social service agencies and community-based organizations. And through a fairly comprehensive process that we went through over many months, selected Unitas to be the platform that we all agreed was going to really provide the best tools for us to make those relationships with the organizations out there in the community. So, Monica probably mentioned that Griffin was one of two early adopters. So Griffin Hospital is one of two that launched this platform first in the state, but I anticipate that other hospitals in the state will follow our lead after.
Well, tell us a little bit more about why making that kind of investment in an outside service like Unite Connecticut is so important to what you're trying to do in the contemporary world of institutional healthcare that's in such flux right now.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, we're trying to make this transition from being a sick care facility to being a more comprehensive provider of healthcare services. And there is some emerging research that's coming out that talks about the kinds of factors that drive people's overall health and well-being. So being a hospital, we tend to think that, you know, health is driven by what we provide to patients as medical providers. Turns out that's actually not the case. Most of what actually drives people's overall health and well-being are more the environmental and the living factors that they have to kind of experience on a day-to-day basis. So it's things like, do they have access to, do they have access to nutritious food? Do they have access to secure housing? Do they have a means of transportation to get to and from their medical appointments? When people have those kinds of things and those kinds of things are in place for them in their lives, their health tends to be better. In fact, the research says that overall health and well-being is driven 60% by some of those factors, those behavioral and also those social factors that I was just mentioning a second ago. Medical care really only contributes to 20% of people's overall health. So as we as hospitals start to rethink our role and we're focused on improving the health of the community and of the population, we know we've got to focus more on the things that drive overall health, like food, like housing, like transportation, like employment. And that's why those providers in the community that really are kind of well-grounded to provide those kinds of services, those partnerships with those organizations become more and more important.
And we're hearing how this partnership under Unite Connecticut has great potential to not only make Griffin Hospital and the work that you do more effective and efficient, but also has a two-way kind of street here where you're also more involved with the organizations and helping to make them more efficient, which is really, really important. And ultimately, I guess, in the last 20 or 30 seconds that we have with you, Todd, it creates a greater socio and economic benefit for the entire region.
Yeah, I mean, historically, if you look at some of the work that's being done by the local agencies that are serving, you know, the needs of folks for food, housing, and some of those other factors, they tend to be under-resourced. They rely upon state aid or federal aid. And whenever there are budget cuts that happen at the state or federal level, many times support to those kinds of agencies are some of the first things that are on the chopping block. So we know that we have to do our part, and we think that by having these close relationships with some of these organizations that provide these vital services, it will benefit everybody.
Todd Liu is Vice President of Population Health and General Counsel at Griffin Hospital, which is one of the first hospitals in Connecticut to launch Unite Connecticut, a statewide program of the Connecticut Hospital Association that connects health and social service providers through a shared technology platform to address social needs and deliver integrated care. Todd, we thank you for joining us, as well as Monica Orris, your Director of Population Health, earlier in the program. Best of luck, and as we told Monica, we'll be excited to come back around and talk to you more about this as the program develops in the future. So thanks for your time this morning. Well, for longtime listeners of the award-winning For the People, we're welcoming back a voice that has been absent from our program for way too long. Tim Bartlett's on the line with us, a long and old dear friend, going back many, many years now, probably in excess of a couple of decades. He's Chief Operating Officer and Senior Vice President for the Central Connecticut Coast YMCA Network. Tim and I worked together, full disclosure, way back when, prior to his Y tenure, but I have watched his trajectory in the Y network. The Central Connecticut Coast YMCA is a nonprofit community service organization that's dedicated to putting principles into practice through programs that build healthy spirits, minds, and bodies for everyone. And we're going to talk about the Y of today. And Tim, that's where I kind of wanted to get started with you. You started in 1990 with the Y. Now we're pushing 30 years with the organization. Tell us a couple of the things that you've seen happening within the Y, not just here in Connecticut, but kind of globally in the Y movement between the 20th century and now here in 2019. What are a couple of those advancements that you've seen that have benefited not only the organization, but the many thousands and tens of thousands of people that have come to YMCAs here in your area?
Oh, wow. Thank you. A couple of different things come to mind. One of the things, you know, versus whatever it was 30 years ago, we're much more intentional. We have a much greater wealth of information at our fingertips. We just didn't know things back then. Mm-hmm. And now we're able to share information in a much easier way and know what maybe a wine in California is doing that's working. And, you know, we have that ability to almost instantaneously share that information and reach out to colleagues across not just, Connecticut and the nation, but internationally to find out what's working. And also, you know, what are our community needs because they're changing so rapidly. Before, I don't think we were able to pivot as quickly as we can now. A big part of that is technology and, you know, the ability just to have all this information available to us. Locally, one of the things that comes to mind is our ability to push out text information, you know, something as simple as if you're a parent and there's a storm, you know, over the summer, you know, hey, we're going to be inside. You can come pick your kid up, you know, in the gym or, you know, little things like that, that might not sound like a lot, but, you know, that makes a big difference to a parent. It's just all the tools we now have at our fingertips that, you know, 30 years ago, I never would have thought, this is where we're at. And it's helpful to our staff and our parents and our kids all, I think, benefit from, these advances in technology.
Yeah, here in Connecticut, too, the networking of multiple former standalone YMCAs into something like the Central Connecticut Coast Network. I mean, back when this all started, it was the one Y in Bridgeport, and then that Bridgeport kind of started partnering or joined with a couple of other Ys, and now the Central Connecticut Coast Network is pretty robust.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And back in the day, you know, there was the Greater Bridgeport YMCA and there was the Greater New Haven YMCA. And we merged. We brought on the Valley YMCA in Ansonia about 10 years later and, you know, kind of grew. And every time, you know, you evolve and you learn and you become better and stronger, it's really grown into a robust organization. And, you know, it's kind of neat that you have all these different groups, but yet we all want the same thing. You know, we all want to make our neighborhoods and our communities better. And each Y has, maybe it's a little bit of a niche in how they do it, but at the end of the day, we're better together and serving people in more ways than we ever had.
Well, going all the way back to the beginning of the YMCA network, it's always been a place where families could go, a trusting environment where they could bring their kids or even leave their kids. So that's the first thing we want to talk about today is the excellent services that the Central Connecticut Coast YMCA and others are offering school-age children and families in terms of before and after school care.
Sure. Yeah, we are, you know, we talk about pivoting to meet the needs of the community. Going back in the 80s, you know, the community came to the Y and said, look, we've got, you know, more and more dual parent working, you know, families. And, you know, what's going to happen with our kids? You know, there's only so many things they can do after school. So the Y stepped in and said, sure, we can help, you know, fill that void and came up with programs that were not only fun and, you know, with physical activity, but also we would help and still do with, you know, homework and tutoring and working with the school systems to help them also achieve their goals because, you know, they've got, you know, metrics they want to meet. And so we work with the school systems to say, okay, you know, what is it, you know, in this particular week that you guys may be working on in school that we can help partner with and dovetail some of the work that you're doing and turn some fun activities to help the kids learn and still have a great, safe place to be. You know, after school, that the parents don't have to worry, that they know that their kids are being, you know, taken care of and loved and enriched and, you know, really are better off than staying. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, those after school hours, if kids are left for their own devices, you know, things might not be as fun. How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah. And a key point is, as my prompt tells me, Connecticut YMCA's partner with 126 different school systems right here in Connecticut. So they're a trusted source. And there's that rapport that exists between the school world and the before and after school world that the Y can provide. But another important point is the positive role models that all of these young people are working under. And the fact that the Y has really become very, very diverse in trying to accommodate the special talents, needs, or desires of these young people. It's not just about going in the gym and throwing the basketball around anymore.
Oh, no, not at all. You know, we try to, you know, work with the whole kid. You know, yeah, you know, a lot of kids do like to play basketball or kickball, but you know what? Not every kid does. So, we look at those kids in every one of those programs to see what works best for them and to give them a wide variety of choices and selections. And we train our staff very hard to make sure that they're aware of you know, what the needs of kids are, you know, and how to best, you know, bring out the best in every kid. Mm-hmm. And so whatever it is that they might need, you know, our staff is ready to do that. And so, you know, we work with all, you know, age groups for school and, you know, no matter who they are, we bring them in, and we think every kid has a chance to succeed if they come to the YMCA after school programs.
Great. Well, I know it's not in your network, but I do have to shout out all the wonderful folks and dedicated volunteers at the YMCA in Waterbury, where I learned how to swim when I was just a little tadpole myself. I wasn't one of those kids whose dad just kind of tossed him off the dock. At least he had the wherewithal to bring me to the YMCA before he tossed me in the water. But one of the staple activities of the YMCA is what a lot of people look at as recreational, but it really is a potentially life-saving initiative, water safety and the YMCA these days, especially in the more urban areas, right?
Absolutely, and I will absolutely agree with you. You can give Jim O'Rourke and the great guys and the folks over there at the Waterbury YMCA a shout-out. They do a terrific job. And then, like us, really, really believe that every child should learn how to be safe around the water. Even if they don't necessarily know how to swim, you know, they haven't taken lessons, we go out to the schools all the time. We go to churches and community centers, and we will work with families to make sure the kids are safe. And it could be as simple as, you know, instilling in them that if you're around a body of water, you don't go in that body of water without, you know, talking to a parent or adult, you know, let them know that you're there and you don't go in without permission. You know, knowing what the signs are, you know, that are posted. So, you know, what deep water is, or, you know, what shallow water is, things like that, knowing, you know, where to get help if something goes wrong, all those type of things. We work with kids because we think any drowning is a preventable drowning. And in our coastal area, there's just, you know, we feel that there's no need to have a child not feel comfortable and safe. And now what you also talked about though, is, you know, we do teach swimming lessons as well. And that is a life-saving skill. And, you know, the kids, if, you know, God forbid they ever fall in the water, you know, one of the things we teach the kids is how to get out, you know, how to get to the side, how to get themselves out, that sort of thing. Because, again, we think any drowning is a preventable drowning, and we want kids to be as safe as possible. And also, swimming's fun, you know. I mean, you think about when you were, you know, a kid at the Waterbury Y, I'm sure it was a fun experience for you to just be in the water. It's a great lifetime skill. You learn to swim. You can swim for the whole rest of your life, and it's it's a wonderful activity to be involved in. It's, you know, it's good for your physical fitness and as well as your mental fitness.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong. There are still a few YMCA centers in the Central Connecticut Coast Network that have either summer camps or activities that are located on natural bodies of water, whether it's the ocean or on ponds and lakes, right?
Oh, yep. We have several that still do that. We actually do field trips as well out to like Silver Sands, where we've actually worked with the state DOT and providing safety, you know, because it's a little bit different if you're a waterfront area versus a pool. But, you know, we still want to impress upon the kids the same, you know, kind of ideas around safety. But yeah, no, there are YMCAs that don't necessarily have their own physical natatorium or pool area, but they use, you know, lakes and ponds.
Right. The last point that we really want to hit on is something that you and I have talked about attached to YMCA initiatives for many, many years that you've been a guest on our program, and that is how the Ys help support the physical well-being above and beyond just kind of, once again, going out in the gym and throwing around the basketball or whatever. You guys have a great program called 12 Weeks to a Healthier You, and this is part of an initiative of supporting wellness together, where the Y partners with individuals and entire families to affect positive lifestyle changes.
Yeah, it's a program we've had for quite a while, and you know, we all came about, we want people to be healthy. We want them to live long, healthy lives, and we do that in many different ways, but this is one that we've targeted specifically to get folks who might be struggling. You know, we all struggle. I'll admit I struggle, you know, with keeping as physically fit as I want and eating right and, you know, following good nutritional rules. And the cool thing about this program is that not only do you have a counselor and a staff person from the YMCA to kind of help guide you through, but you also have a group of other people who are on the same boat with you and all trying to do the same thing. And there's a great camaraderie and support, you know, when you make friends. And when you do that, A, you're most likely not going to skip a class because you know someone else is looking forward to seeing you and you're looking forward to seeing them. But it's also just nice to know that you've got a friend. You've got someone who's going through it and you can count on them and they can count on you to, hey, you know, we can do this together. And that's kind of the approach the Y has taken, you know, taking that and then also adding in the nutritional education and the physical education part of it to kind of make the complete package of how folks can start their path to a healthier lifestyle.
Great. So let us know in the last couple of minutes we have with you, Tim, how folks can get involved. There's a lot of different ways that folks can come to the YMCA and benefit either from select activities or the full boat of offerings at their local YMCA or one that's affiliated in a network like Central Connecticut Coast.
Sure. I mean, you know, our Central Connecticut Coast Y basically spans all the way down to Fairfield, up to Brantford, into Valley, Handen, and Trumbull. We cover that whole area there. And, you know, pretty much wherever you're hearing my voice right now and your voice right now, there's going to be a YMCA close by to where you live. My first thing would be is, you know, go online. You can go to cccymca.org or, you know, Waterbury, you know, YMCA. Look up their website and see what programs they have, because I almost guarantee you they're going to have something that will help you out, you know, and in a reasonable fashion in terms of programming, you know, what might be available to you in your schedule. And, you know, take a look, take a walk in. We just had an open house the other day. We had people come in from all over the place and just looking to get fit or looking to swim or looking for something for their kids. And, you know, tell us what you want. Yeah. And we probably have a program for you.
Yeah. Is it true?
It's just a matter of walking in.
Is it true that people can still come in and select an activity a la carte to try it out or just because that's their passion? Or is it always a matter of having to become a member and then everything is kind of check the box from there?
You can do both, John. You can be what we call a community member, and that would be to your first point where say summer camp. I'm just making something off the top of my head.
Yep.
And then that's all, you know, you and your family want to take care of. You want to be involved with summer camp, or you can also become a full member. And then you can take advantage of everything that the Y has to offer. It's up to you. You have both choices, whatever fits your lifestyle best and your particular circumstance best. You know, the Y will work with every individual. Okay. Another thing I got to say too, is if you are a full member, one of the cool things about being part of the Y is that if you're a member of our Y, you're a member of all Ys.
Yeah.
Pretty much 98% of all the YMCAs across the country have reciprocity.
Super. Well, from school-age childcare before and after school to swimming and water safety, summer camps, and supporting wellness together, YMCAs are there for you, particularly if you're within the area of the Central Connecticut Coast YMCA. Look them up, see what they have to offer, and if you run into our guest this morning, Tim Bartlett, Chief Operating Officer and Senior Vice President for the Central Connecticut Coast YMCA, tell him you heard about it on the award winning For the People. And Tim, I can't wait to talk to you again. We'll probably hit you up ahead of summer camp season and see what the Y has in store. So thanks for visiting with us. Have a great holiday and a great new year. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget,
You can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.